Imagine if the device you are using to listen to this deep dive right now isn't actually a solid object.
Which is hard to do. I mean, you're probably holding it right now.
Right. But what if the screen, the battery, the metal casing, what if none of it is fundamentally solid? What if instead it's essentially this, highly stable illusion, just a really complex swirling pattern of acceleration that only feels solid to you because of how it relates to the rest of the universe?
It's a profoundly unsettling thought. I mean, we are so deeply conditioned to believe in a universe of distinct physical stuff.
Oh, for sure.
You drop a stone, it falls because of gravity. You stick a magnet to your fridge, and it holds because of electromagnetism. We put these phenomena in these separate, neatly labeled boxes.
But today, for you listening, we're going to unpack a really radical theoretical physics document that basically takes those separate boxes, dumps them out, and just sets fire to the cardboard.
Yeah, beautifully put.
The text we are exploring today is simply titled Gravity.MD. And the mission of our deep dive is to explore its incredibly ambitious central goal, which is this attempt to unify gravity and electromagnetism.
Right?
But not by hunting down some elusive, undiscovered quantum particle in a supercollider, but by completely rethinking the underlying math of acceleration.
And, we are going to do this without getting completely lost in the weeds.
Please.
Because while the source material is, well, it's very dense with theoretical physics and complex equations, our goal today is to extract the mechanisms, the actual how and why behind these ideas, so that the underlying logic actually makes sense.
Which means we really need to start by completely dismantling our everyday intuition, like from the ground up.
We do.
We have to look at the very first deeply weird concept proposed in this framework, which is the idea that physical particles might not actually exist as independent objects.
Yeah, that's the hurdle.
The document bases this on a philosophy called Leibniz relationalism. Now, normally we think of space like a giant empty warehouse.
Right, like a big 3D grid.
Exactly, a 3D grid, and you just drop particles into it. Stars, planets, apples, people. The space just exists whether there's stuff in it or not.
That is the standard Newtonian view, yes,
Right.
the absolute container. But Leibniz relationalism argues the exact opposite of that.
Right.
It argues that the geometry of the universe is defined entirely by the relationships between things. There is no independent, empty warehouse.
Wow.
If you remove the relationships, the space itself literally ceases to exist.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because if there is no underlying grid and everything is just relationships, what exactly is a particle? Because the text describes them as, quote, stationary solutions in dynamic field equations, which honestly sounds like a phrase engineered in a lab to give people a headache.
It's very dense, yes.
So think of it like this. Imagine you are standing on the bank of a really fast-moving river and you spot a whirlpool. That whirlpool looks like a distinct thing, right? It has a shape. It has the precise location. It interacts with leaves that float by. You could point to it and say, there is a whirlpool.
Right, you can see it right there.
But if you reach out and try to grab it, there's no actual solid object there.
It is just water.
Exactly. It's just a stable, stationary pattern of moving water.
Yeah.
The water itself is constantly flowing, constantly rushing past, but the pattern remains stable.
I love that.
And that is what this document is saying a particle is. An electron or a quark isn't a tiny solid billiard ball. It's a stable whirlpool in the continuously flowing fields of the universe.
That analogy actually perfectly captures the spirit of the document's approach to what physicists call the Lorentz structure.
Okay.
So the paper starts with the standard Lorentz force equation, which is the classic formula used to describe how electric and magnetic fields act on a particle. But the author does something highly unconventional with it.
What do they do?
They differentiate it. They look at how that force changes over time, and they apply what they term a complexity filter.
Yeah, this is where I got a bit hung up in the text. The paper argues that if you want to change an electric field or a magnetic field, it requires macroscopic restructuring.
Right.
It's incredibly expensive from an energy standpoint. But changing acceleration is somehow, quote, free. Wait, why is moving mass expensive but changing acceleration free?
It sounds weird.
That seems completely counterintuitive.
Yeah.
If I hit the gas pedal in my car to accelerate, that absolutely costs energy. It burns fuel.
It does, but that's at our human macroscopic scale. You have to zoom all the way down to the quantum scale to see what the author actually means.
Okay.
If you want to alter a large-scale magnetic field, you literally have to move massive magnets or shift giant electrical currents. It requires a tremendous input of work to restructure the environment.
Right, that makes sense.
But down at the microscopic level, everything is constantly jittering, vibrating, and interacting.
It's just a soup of constant motion.
Precisely. Particles are continuously accelerating and decelerating just by existing in proximity to each other. The acceleration field is the baseline reality of a dynamic universe.
Oh, I see.
It is happening constantly without a massive external energy input. That is why the text treats it as free.
Okay, I see where you're going. So the author runs this complexity filter, stripping away the expensive macroscopic stuff, and the core equation basically boils down to a much simpler approximation.
Yes.
It says, the change in force over time is roughly equal to the charge times the acceleration crossed with the magnetic field. Now, vector calculus alert for our listeners.
Right.
What does crossed with actually mean in plain English?
So in physics, a cross product essentially means a perpendicular push.
Okay.
If you have a magnetic field pointing straight up and a particle moving straight forward, the force doesn't push it up or forward, it pushes it sideways.
It's sideways.
Right. It creates a twisting or curving motion.
Which naturally brings us right back to the whirlpool analogy.
Yeah.
The magnetic field and the inherent acceleration are combining to create this sideways twisting dynamic system.
Exactly.
But if particles are just these stable field patterns, these whirlpools spinning around, what happens when we look at the absolute dead center of that spin?
Yes.
Because in physics, looking at the exact center of things is usually where the math completely falls apart.
You are talking about the problem of infinities.
Yes.
Infinities are the absolute bane of theoretical physicists. When your equation spits out an infinity, it almost always means your math has broken down. It has stopped describing physical reality.
And the text tackles this head on. It points out that both gravity and the magnetic field generated by this spinning motion run into this exact same wall.
They do.
Let's visualize the math for a second for you listening. With gravity, the force equation is big G times the mass divided by the radius squared.
Right.
With a rotating magnetic field driven by centripetal acceleration, the equation is velocity squared divided by the radius.
And in both of those equations, you are dividing by the radius, which is the distance from the center.
Right. So imagine zooming in on our particle whirlpool. As you get closer and closer to the absolute dead center, that radius shrinks.
Right. It gets smaller and smaller.
Approaching zero. And when you divide any number by a fraction that is infinitely close to zero, the result just explodes.
It skyrockets to infinity.
Exactly. The gravitational force goes to infinity, and the centripetal acceleration goes to infinity.
They diverge into nonsense. Standard physics usually has to invent these really messy mathematical correction terms, basically sweeping the infinity under the rug to force the math to work so we can keep making calculations.
But this gravity.md framework proposes something entirely different. It says, what if these two exploding equations aren't breaking physics? What if they're actually trying to tell us something fundamental?
Yes.
The author takes the exploding gravity equation and the exploding centripetal acceleration equation and just sets them equal to each other.
Which is a bold move.
Super bold. So big G times M divided by radius squared equals V squared divided by radius. And when you do the basic algebra to simplify that, the problematic dividing by zero issue just mathematically cancels out.
It does.
You are left with one incredibly clean equation. Big G times M equals V squared times R.
Which is a profound structural claim.
But hold on. Let me play devil's advocate here for a second.
Right.
Big G times mass equals velocity squared times the radius. I know I've seen that equation before.
You definitely have.
That is the standard foundational equation for basic orbital mechanics. It's how we calculate a satellite orbiting the Earth or the Earth orbiting the Sun. How does a standard high school physics equation suddenly solve the deepest quantum mysteries of the universe?
What's fascinating here is that the context of the equation is completely revolutionized. Yes, it absolutely governs planetary orbits, but the text posits that at the quantum level, right at the center of the particle where the radius approaches zero, this equation proves that gravity and magnetic fields aren't two separate forces throwing infinite tantrums. They are the exact same phenomenon.
They are the same whirlpool.
Exactly. This stable condition, where gravitational energy and rotational energy perfectly balance out into gm equals v squared r, is what actually determines how particles are classified in the first place.
Oh, wow.
You don't need to invent messy correction terms. the infinities naturally merge into a finite, stable classification.
That's incredible.
The particle only exists as a thing in our reality precisely because it satisfies that perfectly balanced orbital condition at its deepest core.
It is an incredibly elegant solution on paper. But, you know, math in a document is one thing. To see if this unified theory actually holds weight, we can't just test this on a lab bench.
No, you'd need extreme conditions.
We need a massive, real-world laboratory with extreme gravity and extreme twisting magnetic fields. And the text points us to the perfect celestial laboratory, which is our sun.
The sun is the ultimate stress test for this theory of magnetic field propagation. If this mathematical framework is correct, the unique physical properties of the sun should perfectly reflect the equations.
And the scale of the sun is staggering. It has a mass of 2 nonillion kilograms. That's a 2 followed by 30 zeros.
It's massive.
But the crucial detail, the mechanism that makes the sun the perfect test case, is something called differential rotation. The sun is not a solid ball of rock like the Earth.
Right, it's fluid.
It's a massive roiling ball of plasma. Because it's fluid, different parts of it spin at different speeds. The equator of the sun completes a full rotation in about 25 days, but if you look at the poles, they take much longer, about 35 days.
And that difference in speed is the engine of the entire solar system's magnetic environment.
How so?
Imagine holding a giant wet towel. If your left hand twists it faster than your right hand, the fabric stretches, shears, and wraps tightly around itself.
Okay, yeah, I can picture that.
That is exactly what is happening to the magnetic field lines of the sun. The faster spinning equator literally drags and stretches the magnetic field, wrapping it around the star. This immense shear is what drives the turbulent 11-year solar dynamo cycle.
Okay, so the speed, the V in our equations, varies wildly depending on what latitude of the sun you're looking at.
Correct. And remember our golden unified equation, GM equals V squared R.
Yep.
Well, the G and the M are constants based on the total mass of the sun. But the V, the velocity, is constantly changing depending on whether you are measuring near the fast equator or the sluggish poles.
So how can that unified equation possibly hold true for the entire star if the V keeps changing?
The framework argues that deep inside the solar core, that resolution must happen jointly. The core has to mathematically account for all those different latitudes and speeds simultaneously. The magnetic field is essentially propagating through this complex differential structure.
Here's where it gets really interesting. To explain how this happens, the author introduces a master singular function. They give it the Greek letter beta. And the equation for beta is V squared times the speed of light squared divided by big G times mass.
Now, let's clarify something immediately, because the sudden appearance of the speed of light squared, or C squared, might seem like it came out of nowhere.
Right. Earlier, we just had velocity squared. Why throw the speed of light in there?
Because we are now talking about the ultimate balance of energy on a stellar scale. In relativity, C squared is the universal conversion factor between mass and energy. Think of EV equals MC squared.
Oh, sure.
To properly compare the immense rotational energy of the sun's plasma with its crushing gravitational energy, you need that relativistic scaling factor. So beta acts as a universal rotational gravitational energy ratio. It is a cosmic tug of war.
Let me make sure I had this straight. If you calculate beta for a giant system, and the number is less than one, it means gravity is winning the tug of war.
Yes.
The system is gravitationally bound, pulling inward.
Exactly. And if beta is greater than one, rotation is winning. The centrifugal forces are dominant, and the system basically wants to fling itself apart.
But the true revelation of the document lies deep inside the sun. There is a specific transition region deep within the solar interior called the Tachycline.
The Tachycline, yes.
It's the exact boundary layer where the outer, differentially rotating plasma meets the inner, uniformly rotating core. It is the zone where the shear twisting forces are at their absolute maximum, and it's where scientists actually believe the solar dynamo operates.
Right.
And according to this framework, if you calculate beta at the Tachycline, it is exactly one.
Exactly one.
The tug of war is a perfect mathematical tie.
And that is why the singularity resolves. At the Tachycline, the rotational energy and the gravitational energy are in perfect equilibrium. The differential rotation of the plasma reveals that the magnetic field's propagation cannot be separated from the gravitational pull.
Wow.
At that boundary, they share the exact same mathematical structure. The plasma stops acting just like a fluid being pulled by gravity and perfectly balances into an electromagnetic dynamo.
Okay, we have taken a massive mind-bending journey so far. We've redefined solid particles as whirlpools in a relational field.
We have.
We've taken the exploding infinities of gravity and magnetism and merged them into a single stable condition. And we've seen how that unified math perfectly balances out the twisting plasma deep inside the sun.
It's a lot to take in.
It is. Mm. But I know you, listening to this, are probably thinking, this is brilliant theory, but does it actually do anything? What are the real-world practical implications of redefining gravity and magnetism like this?
Well, the framework does open up some highly radical technological possibilities. But it is also crucial to acknowledge that any robust scientific theory must be completely transparent about its own boundaries.
Well, let's start with the most explosive technological application proposed in the document, which is UFO propulsion, or unidentified anomalous phenomena, as they're called now.
Right, UAPs.
The text flat out states that if this framework is true, you could build a craft that exploits it. If there is no real separation between gravity and electromagnetism because they are just different expressions of the same acceleration structure, then you don't need rocket fuel.
You manipulate the underlying fields directly.
Right. Remember that cross product we talked about earlier? The perpendicular push?
Yes, the sideways push.
The text argues that if you can technologically control and project a highly specific magnetic field, you can generate that sideways force. Because the magnetic field and the acceleration field are structurally linked, manipulating the local magnetic field naturally induces an acceleration field in a specific direction.
It's a fascinating concept.
You essentially warp the local geometry, and the craft just falls or slides forward into that warped space.
Hmm.
It would allow for extreme right-angle turns and massive acceleration with absolutely zero exhaust.
No heat signature at all.
No combustion, no heat signature, just surfing the relational geometry of the universe.
This raises an important question, though. As thrilling as the prospect of zero exhaust warp-style propulsion is, we really have to ground ourselves. The author of Gravity.md is actually quite frank about what this mathematical framework does not solve. Mm. We have to balance the scales here.
Fair enough. Let's look at the definitive victories first. What does this framework successfully accomplish?
Structurally, it is a triumph. It successfully links gravity and electromagnetism as shared acceleration fields. It provides a highly elegant mathematical reason for why singularities unify, proving they are the same phenomenon.
Right.
It explains that particles exist as stable, stationary solutions in dynamic fields rather than independent hard objects. And wonderfully, it explains mass simply as a coupling to that baseline acceleration field.
So it answers the structural how. But the blind spots are significant.
They are.
The document admits it completely ignores quantum gravity. It doesn't even attempt to explain dark matter or dark energy, which make up the vast majority of the universe.
Yeah, that's a big omission.
And perhaps most humbly, it admits it has absolutely no idea why the gravitational constant, big G, has this specific numerical value that it does. It just accepts that it exists.
It also relies on the equivalence principle, which is the idea that inertial mass and gravitational mass are the same, without actually explaining why they are the same. And right now, it offers no testable experimental predictions that definitively differentiate it from Einstein's general relativity.
Right.
The mathematical unity is incredibly beautiful, but the deeper fundamental why of the universe is still left open.
So what does this all mean for you listening to this right now, driving your car or doing the dishes? The math we cover today is elegant and the theories are undeniably wild. But how does this actually change your perspective of the reality around you?
I think the biggest takeaway is the immense value of looking at old, stubborn problems through a completely new relational lens. For decades, physics has treated gravity and electromagnetism as warring forces fighting for control of the universe. This text suggests they might just be shared structures, two sides of the same accelerating coin.
It reminds us that science thrives on exactly this kind of audacious critical thinking. Taking a stack of seemingly isolated phenomena, the push of a magnet on your fridge, the orbital mechanics of a satellite, the twisting shear of the sun's plasma, and daring to find the hidden mathematical string connecting them all.
It challenges the very concept of empty space.
It really does. And I want to leave you with a final lingering thought built on this text, but stretching just a bit beyond it. If this framework is right, if the physical particles making up your body and your world are not solid things, but just an illusion created by stationary patterns and flowing fields, what happens when those dynamic fields eventually shift?
That's a profound question.
Is the fundamental structure of the universe less like a solidly built house of bricks and more like a sustained musical note?
Yeah.
Just a stable resonance echoing in a dynamic void.
A cosmic hum.
Exactly. Next time you set your phone down on a table or lean your weight against a wall, take a split second to ponder the physical solidity of the very device you are using to listen to this deep dive. Because if Gravity.MD is right, everything you touch is just a whirlpool waiting for the current to change.